It's Monday. I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's the Gab and Jules Show. Jules, welcome back. We got a tremendous show coming up. We've had the tremendous performance from Ibrahimovic in the Milan Derby. We have Barcelona losing. We have Real Madrid losing. How about that? We have Juve dropping points. But we have to start with the Merseyside Derby. Everton, top of the league. But I think in some ways that 2-2 draw overshadowed by the horrible news of the injury to Virgil van Dijk. We've got Don Hutchinson joining us. Don, it's an ACL injury. I think best case scenario, he's not going to be back maybe until the Euros, and I think that's the very, very best case scenario. So we'll get to the dynamic of the injury in a minute. I just want to ask you, in the immediate, you've got Gomez, you've got Matip, you've got Fabinho who can drop into the back line. He's going to go with that and then maybe make a move in January for somebody, correct?
I think so, Gab. I think that's the way to go, I think, for Jurgen Klopp. I think Joe Gomez is still trying to find his feet and trying to find his self-confidence. So I would imagine, I think it'll be Fabinho that will drop into that back line. He's got an abundance of midfield players to choose from. But now they've got to come together and really stick together as a group.
I think in January, when you make that decision, you know, inevitably they'll be linked with big names, big expenses, Upamecano, Koulibaly, whatever. I wouldn't be surprised personally if they go for a cheaper short-term option, because there's a window of opportunity to win with this team. And clearly in the signing of Thiago as well, you saw that. They're thinking, let's cash in now. Let's go short-term now, double down, and try to win silverware now. Jules, let's talk about the dynamic of the incident. It was a ball over the top. Van Dijk goes for it. He was offsides, as we would later find out, via VAR. There's a collision with Jordan Pickford. Now, the referee, who was Michael Oliver, very experienced referee, top referee here in England, he couldn't award the penalty because the VAR, David Coote, decided that Van Dijk was offside. Yeah. It was a correct decision, although a close decision. But then there's no sending off for Pickford. Certainly that feels wrong.
It's as disgraceful almost as the tackle in itself, because I was in Liverpool, everybody could see the tackle, everybody could see the gravity of the tackle and how serious it was. I think Jordan Pickford should be banned for as long as Virgil van Dijk is out. Don't give me but that was not intentional, he didn't do it on purpose. He goes in and with his two legs catches the knee and the leg of Virgil van Dijk. What is that? Who does that?
So, Jules, that's not going to happen, Jules, because that's not...
I don't care.
That's not in the rules.
Yeah, I know, but that's the way it should be, because... Who knows? Do you know if Virgil van Dijk will ever come back at the level that he was before?
We don't know, but on that situation, that rule is not in the laws of the game. So
it should have been a red card anyway, straight away. And Michael Oliver should have gone by himself to see on the screen, even if David Coote and the VAR didn't say to him, you should go and have a look yourself.
Well, Don, before we get to that, you've been through that. You played the game. Was it as horrific as it looks to us who never played professionally?
100%, guys. Honestly, you know, back in my day, you know, you had to go over the top and you had to go high because that was the nature of the beast back then. You know, when you're going into tackles with Patrick Vieira and Manu Petit and Brian Robson and Paul Ince, you had to go high because you knew they were going to go high as well. So you had to try and look after yourself. Thank God the rules and the laws have been changed since I've played. But I've not seen a worse tackle, I don't think, in a decade than Jordan Pickford's tackle.
It's reminiscent of the Roy Keane on
Alfie.
It is. Alfie.
It's even worse because the way he catches him, it's even worse.
So I'm just want to get into the mechanics of what happened. And I hate to pick on referees, but as I see, and you guys can jump in and correct me if I'm wrong, Michael Oliver sees a collision. Maybe he made a mistake. Maybe he didn't realize how serious it was. Now, at this point, and the reason I go through this is Liverpool have asked for an explanation here. We need to find out what Coote and Liverpool and Oliver said to each other, right? Yeah. Because Coote sees it. His first job is to establish whether it's a penalty, so he established the offside, fine. But then he's obviously seen the penalty. Now, I'm guessing in his mind, he says, well, Oliver didn't give it, and I think it's a yellow, and because I think it's a yellow, I can't intervene as a VAR, right? Now, obviously, Coote would be wrong because that is a red. But still, there has to be dialogue, and there is dialogue, and it's laid out, so there is dialogue between the VAR and the referee.
You could see Oliver waiting.
at that point, you expect Coot to say to Oliver, Michael, this looks pretty bad. I think it might just be a yellow, but you might want to take a look at this.
Sure,
right?
100%.
Should be. Did you get a clear view of it, Michael? Right? Because Oliver knows. He's experienced. He maybe didn't get a clear view of it. This is where the breakdown is, right, Don?
Yeah, it is. I mean, everyone seems to think that the offside takes precedent, and that because that's the first phase of the three, everyone sort of assumes that, well...
No, everyone's stupid, because everyone who's followed the football for the last 24 months knows that simply because the offside takes precedence over the penalty.
That's all.
It doesn't mean that because you're offside, oh, look, he was offside, okay, I can go and kick him in the nuts. You can't do that, yeah?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Everyone, and I think the referees maybe included, got sucked into the situation where there was three protocols to look at, and they've immediately gone back to phase one where, you know, Virgil van Dijk might have been offside. I mean, I've looked at it 1,000 times, and I think Calvert-Lewin's actually playing him on. So they've gone back to phase one, but you guys are right. You know, even if someone's offside, I can't then walk up to Julian and punch him in the face and not get any sanction. You have to look at the phases.
That's so true.
You have to look at the phases and then the tackle in itself. If Fabinho makes that tackle, if you know Neymar makes that tackle, if Jonjo Shelvey makes that tackle in the middle of the park, you are looking at a 4, 5, 6 game ban. Yeah. It was horrendous.
Jules is saying he should be out for as long as
100%.
Pickford should. Okay.
100%. You cause an injury like this.
Okay. I appreciate the sentiment. Morally and ethically, I understand the sentiment. But
I know it's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen.
But I would like to see it.
Don, I think the early reports are that Pickford will not be facing any retrospective action because under the way the FA are set up, because both the referee and the VAR supposedly saw the incident, you can't re-referee the game. Does that sit well with you?
Doesn't really sit well with me. No, I'm not suggesting that the FA and the Premier League would bend any rules, but I think you have to look at individual cases. And, you know, when I seen Son, you know, going for the tackle last season against Andre Gomez, and Andre Gomez broke his leg, Son was in absolutely bits. He was in tears. You could tell it was an accident. This one from Jordan Pickford was one of the worst tackles I've seen in a long time. And it's almost like he'll half get away with it because he's a goalkeeper. If that happens anywhere else on the pitch, Gavin Jules, you know, players would be looking at a real lengthy ban because that was a horrendous tackle. That could be a career ender. You know, we all assume that an ACL is going to be fixed and everything's going to be fine. You know, surgeries can get complicated and things can go wrong. So we wish Virgil van Dijk all the very best. I've been there. I've done an ACL and it is a brutal rehab, but it seems bizarre to me, and it doesn't sit well with me that Jordan Pickford won't get any punishment.
I'm assuming, I'm going to stick up for Pickford just for a semi-second in the sense.
Try.
I don't think it's fair to compare his reaction to Son's reaction simply because, as you were saying earlier, Jules, the thing about ACLs, and I don't know if this was the case with you, Don, you don't feel that immediate pain the way Gomez did, the way Andre Gomez did.
No, that's true.
And so it's possible he had the adrenaline. It was a clash. It was a knock. He didn't realize what he'd done until later, right? That's possible.
I'm going to tell you.
No, but what I'm saying is, I don't want to have a go at Pickford for not showing immediate remorse.
Okay, maybe, but I can tell you, and Don, I'm sure, will back me up on that. When he tackles Virgil van Dijk, he knows exactly when the incident happens, he knows exactly that he went really hard on him. He knows exactly that he caught his leg. He knows exactly he caught his knee. There's no Son almost had no idea that he caught Andre Gomez the way, and he was Jordan Pickford. Of course he doesn't want to injure him, but I can tell you that as soon as he tackles him, he knows exactly how bad it was. 100%.
So if we cycle this back a little bit to the game, with all the love in the world for Everton, and obviously there was a very controversial late VAR offside not given, which, by the way, a lot of the focus was on that. I feel like it's Groundhog Day. We've been through all this last season.
Yeah.
It has to do with the way the Premier League has chosen, the PGMOL has chosen to go and deal with close offsides.
Yeah.
Flag down, and we're going to go and put lines up there and whatever. You either deal with it or you don't. But I also want to point out that Henderson's goal at the end, which was struck off, that's Pickford completely throwing it into the back of his net.
Completely.
100%.
Yeah,
right?
He should save it. Okay. He's on his left hand as well.
So what I want to get to, Don, is did Liverpool deserve the 3 points from that game?
I think they did, because I think, like you guys, I think when you look at the offside call, when Mane was allegedly to be flagged offside, I've looked at that 1,000 times again, and I don't see Sadio Mane being offside. Very quickly, my theory on that should be, get rid of the red line and look at it from the naked eye, and then if we can see Sadio Mane's half a yard offside or a little bit less, but we can see it, he's then offside. Well, if it's too tight and we're going for absolute millimetres, I think you've got to let it go, because we seem to be chalking off an awful lot of goals, and that's what the brand, that's what we want to see, don't we? We want to see goals going in. You know, a last-minute winner.
I disagree business, but yeah, I know, I just want to see things referee correctly. I do take your point. I don't want necessarily to see this forensic 3D imaging. And in fact, you know, guess what? Neither does FIFA. They've given directives, and I've spoken to them. This is the only situation where it happens, where, you know, it's one thing if it's tight. So the offside, I know you did the Crotone Juventus game, which wasn't watched by as many people as the Merseyside derby. But Morata's offside. You can clearly see his heel is offside. Now, it's very, very close, but you can very, very clearly see that. Yeah. That is good use of VAR to determine offsides.
But right. Sanabria's goal for Betis against Real Sociedad on Sunday night is exactly the same as Sadio Mane.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, really? But I think don't show the line. Don't show the line. Just show the footage, stop the footage, and then said VAR and the ref have decided this is offside. Don't show the line. The line brings you more trouble than anything else.
It's they are making a rod for their own back. But on the balance of play, leaving aside the disallowed goal, and perhaps also leaving aside the fact that if Pickford gets sent off, like he should have been sent off, then he's not in goal. And, you know, he did make some very good stops later in the game.
Yeah, definitely.
On the balance of play, did Liverpool deserve the 3 points, leaving aside the refereeing decisions?
Well, yeah, but you can't leave aside the referee's decisions, because they're hugely important in the game.
But what I'm saying, Don, is I think we all agree Liverpool deserved it.
Yeah.
Based on the refereeing decisions. So I'm saying, even if we take the refereeing decisions out, Liverpool still deserve to win. Liverpool will still...
I think so, guys. I mean, there wasn't a huge amount in it. It wasn't like Liverpool were battering Everton and it was always going to be a Liverpool win. Now, I thought the game was a very competitive game. There was loads of tackles flying in left, right and centre. There was loads of incidents going on. But I think if you're asking me over the 90 minutes and you take all of the referee decisions apart, Liverpool probably just edge it. And that's me who's played in both camps. I've not got a dog in this fight. You know, I've played for both. There's no bias whatsoever.
And it's a Liverpool performance without Virgil van Dijk as well. Yeah. So defensively with Gomez and Matip, I still think...
And without Alisson.
Yeah, and without Alisson. I still think there's something not right with Trent Alexander-Arnold. I don't like the way he defends on the second goal, the way Ding is so free. There's so much space for Ding to pull the perfect cross for Calvert-Lewin. I don't like his defending on the Richarlison header on the post. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what his positioning is about. I'm struggling to understand what's wrong with Alexander-Arnold so far this season defensively. I know we all know that he'd had flaws before defensively, but this is really, really, really low now defensively from him.
It's a good point. I mean, and somebody... chuck this out there. And look, I'm not the biggest fan of Andy Robertson either. I mean, I think he's an exceptional left back, but I don't think that, you know, he's the second coming the way some people describe him. And I think he had some issues too. Some people have suggested, and I think you can realistically only do this in January because you're just short of people. Maybe what if Klopp ditched the 4-3-3 and goes 3-4-3? In other words, you put Fabinho in the back line, and then in January you bring somebody else in. Maybe you bring in Connor Cody, who's obviously played in a back three and obviously has Liverpool roots, for example.
Yeah.
Won't cost you 80 million.
But you saw Alexander-Arnold in that formation with England, and that wasn't great either.
Okay, but that's England. That's a weirdo game, whatever. Yeah. I mean, would that help Alexander-Arnold and Robert? Because clearly going forward, he's still critical to Liverpool going forward, Don.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think, I mean, listen, we're talking about two of the best, you know, fullbacks in world football. But I think it would help them if Jurgen did go with three, it would give them that license to go forward even more. I mean, you could imagine those two, their assist numbers over the last couple of seasons have been absolutely frightening. But you'd sort of semi-take that defensive responsibility away from the pair. And then you have the three at the back, and maybe Fabinho's in there as well, who knows the position, knows how to cover, very intelligent player. And it might just see Liverpool through... Until in the January window, as we said, you know, if you can get through and you can pick up results, you can stay in touch of maybe Man City, because I think across all the leagues in Europe, guys, I think we're going to see some really strange results.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Jules was talking about it in the lift coming up here, between COVID and so many games, yeah.
Preseason, almost crapped.
This season, no preseason. You were talking to, was it Bernardo Silva after the game?
Bernardo Silva after the game on Saturday, yeah.
I want to turn to Everton, though, because I think we have to give them credit. They are top
time,
of the league.
Of course.
Don, obviously, you pointed it out. You're entirely unbiased here. But what do you make of – can you just talk a little bit about Dominic Calvert-Lewandowski? Because this
Lewandowski, you mean.
Lewandowski, yeah. Sorry. This is pretty special, what we're seeing. Michael Keane came out and he talked about, well, there's a different attitude, different confidence the manager's given us. From the outside, I get that. It's a good work environment, and I get it. You've added Allen and Ducouré, who've been really good, and James has shown that he can hang. Is that all there is, or how do individual players actually improve from one year to the next?
Well, I think it's the coaching of Carlo Ancelotti. He came out with a great line, guys, a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and he said he played with a grade Inzaghi, and he said Inzaghi scored over 300 goals from Milan, and he said 200 of them were first-time finishers. So I think you can see in the way Calvert-Lewin's, I think, finished every single goal so far, correct me if I'm wrong, they've all been first-time finishers. I think he's got a little way to go. I don't think we should get carried away just yet. Everyone talked about Tammy Abraham at the start of last season, and once his goals dried up, his performances didn't match the start that he had. So I think there's a sensational player in Dominic Calvert-Lewin, but I don't think he should think he's the finished article, and I don't think Duncan Ferguson, and I'm certain that Carlo Ancelotti won't let him rest on what he's doing so far. He's got to keep improving.
What happens if Dominic Calvert-Lewandowski gets injured? I mean, what do you think of the backup options?
No, that is the problem, and that's the problem for many clubs. If Jamie Vardy gets injured for Leicester, if Dominic Calvert-Lewin gets injured, Richarlison can play that role. He can go and play as a false number nine. I don't think it suits Richarlison. I think he's suited in a wider position when he's running towards the goal. But that is the problem. You know, when you play someone like Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and he's so informed and he's so critical to what you're doing, you've got to make sure you've got a backup. Very quickly, just going back to Jordan Pickford, I mean, that's why Robin Olsen's been brought in. So Jordan Pickford's now got serious competition for places, and that's how it should be. Calvert-Lewin should be under pressure for his position.
Yeah, Jules, just quickly. I can't. You've got the England keeper, and the serious competition is represented by the guy who was at Cagliari last season, who's drummed out of Roma 2 years ago. But anyway.
No, I was just going to say, I think the depth in the squad for Everton could be the issue. We saw when Seamus Coleman came off for injury. Ben Godfrey, who's a centre-back, who's just arrived from Norwich, had to play out right back. And I think he's the same if Calvert-Lewin gets injured. Maybe
Mason Holgate will be back at some point,
You would think so, yeah. but he's not just yet. And I think in midfield is probably where they have enough depth, maybe. But in other positions, this could be an issue. Let's not forget as well that Ronald Koeman, when he had this glorious time at Everton, played Dominic Calvert-Lewin as a right wing-back. Here you go. Yeah, I'm sure he saw the talent there.
You got to stop picking on Ronald.
Well, no, I can't stop picking on him because
it's personal.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there, I guess, at this point. It's funny, I go back to that Carlo quote about Pippo Inzaghi. Yeah, first of all, I don't know if that's true, if he just kind of made that up to prove a point, you know.
But probably, you know. Right wing back, Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Here you go.
But it's funny because the 200 finishes, first time finishes, go in the back of the net, and then there's probably another 700 that kind of went into tier two.
True.
Pippo Inzaghi, phenomenal goal scorer, so smart, off and offside, but he does have a point about the first time finishes. Thanks so much, Don.
No worries. Take care, guys. Stay safe.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Enough Premier League. How about the Derby della Madonnina, the Madonnina, the gold Madonna that sits above the Duomo in Milan, my hometown, looks down over everybody. What was a red and black side that ended up the better? Milan 2-1 winners in the Derby. Zlatan Ibrahimovic stealing the show at 39 years of age. You got anything?
I mean, I don't want to expose you. I don't want to, you know, go back to a few weeks ago when he got that new deal and you were not so convinced and there's a long way to go this season and he might not score again ever. I don't know. But I don't know. I was watching that game thinking, wow, 39. And I think your skepticism was genuine at the time. Would you give him another deal or not? Do you play Rafael Leao central? Do you go for someone younger?
It's about giving him a deal at that number, figure.
But then when he wins you the derby, when you're top of the table for the first time in, 25 years? Because he's been so good. That leadership is incredible. I mean, yeah, of course, all the arrogance and, like, you know, Milan didn't get a king, they got a god and all that kind of stuff, which he does, which is amazing, really.
And he defeated the coronavirus.
Yeah, and all of that. Look, I don't know how 39, you know, I'm not even sure Ronaldo can go and play until 39 and play like this.
You don't want to troll those people, so let's pretend you never said that. Pay no attention to this.
No, I hope Cristiano does. I'm just saying it's unreal.
I wrote a column about this. It's up on the website if you want to get more into it. I think what's remarkable is the way Pioli has put pieces around him that help mask some of Ibra's deficiencies at 39 and maximize the things he can do. There's so much raw speed and quality going forward. Salamakers, Rafael Leao, Teo Hernandez on the other side. I think a lot of credit has to go to Pioli as well. I thought he won the tactical battle against Antonio Conte.
I agree.
And Conte, again, wasn't happy. I mean, it's hard, right? So he points out that, well, Bastoni and Skriniar weren't there, to which you might say, well, okay, but you weren't playing Skriniar before either. And, you know, Kolarov in the back three, you put him there. You put him there earlier when other people were available as well. I'm not sure Kolarov at this stage of his career, you know, if you get him, he's an attacking player, basically.
I know.
You know, he's...
And that means you play Perisic as left wing back, who obviously is very good going forward, but cannot defend either.
Well, that's the thing. He says, I put out a very attacking team, right? Because Hakimi is an attack, you know, basically a winger playing wing back.
Yeah.
And then you got Perisic on the other side, who is a winger. And then he says, I play two strikers, and some people want me to put a guy in the hole as well. And he's obviously talking about Eriksen. Obviously, you can't do that. Eriksen came on. He didn't seem happy. This is an old issue with Eriksen, but he just does not seem to be a fit with Conte. And is it Conte's fault?
I don't know. You would think that... So he replies Vidal after, with just 20 minutes to go, well, I was surprised he didn't come on earlier, but maybe it's because Conte felt like he had to bring him on more than he really thought it could make a difference. I don't know. But you would think this is perfect for Eriksen. You could play... I mean, even Barella, you could play Barella. I wonder if Eriksen and Barella can play together, really.
Barella can do everything, so
yeah, I know. Barella is amazing, but still. But just say to Eriksen, be free. You're the number 10. You've got Lautaro and Lukaku ahead of you. You've got two wing backs.
He thinks everybody in the team has to have a job.
I know, but you're losing 2-1 in the derby with 20 minutes to go. Just tell him, just go and do it. Create something. Do something special.
Inter did have their chances
in the second half.
I think, look, if you break down every single chance, this game could have easily ended 2-2 or maybe even with an Inter victory.
Yeah, definitely.
I think, though, what it did highlight was that this season, I think it's going to be difficult for Conte to dole out the playing time, to get the right people in the right games. Because, look, Vidal is not going to play every game. Right? No. This just ain't going to happen at his age.
Yeah.
Right. The Lukaku-Lautaro thing, you know, when Lukaku, I thought, had a great game. I mean, he missed a chance at the end, but he was tremendous. I mean, he was a one-man wrecking crew.
I agree.
But there's still a lot of balance to be found on this team. And I don't know, And I just think what's going to hurt Conte is one of those guys who does so much work on the training pitch. You speak to anybody who's ever worked under him, and they say you spend so much time. When you go and you defend on the wing, you know, move your butt this way to show him inside. He's so granular, and he has no time to work this season. He's got no time to work at the players.
No, but this is the squad he had last year already. You know, this is not a squad with like 10 new players. This is a squad that he had a lot of time to work with. Okay, apart from Kolarov,
Vidal, Hakimi, Perisic. I mean, that's the starting 11.
But you see what I mean? This is still a squad who already has the DNA that what Conte wants them to do.
It's what he wanted. And I think that is the issue that he's going to have to deal with. TV cameras are off, which means we can get more granular now with our podcast listeners, Jules.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to say, to finish on Inter, I mean, Lautaro and Lukaku obviously had a great season last year. They worked well together. In a game like this, I was really disappointed by Lautaro Martinez, especially when you compare to Lukaku. They have different profile, of course, and they're more complementary than just, you know, looking at them like, oh, Lukaku does this and what does Lautaro, but I don't know. I thought Alexis Sanchez should have come on far earlier than what he did in the like 85th minute or whatever. It was 87 or at the end of the game. And I don't know. I think Lautaro, you can see when he has a good game and when he hasn't. And I think when he's not in a good day, there's no point keeping him for so long on the pitch.
I think Conte's Inter in a difficult position, like I said, because their squad is so big. They have so many players. They were hoping to cash in on them to balance the books. They weren't able to. I just think Conte is going to just struggle to work with everybody and to find the right combinations. I do want to give a shout out though again to Lukaku, because if that ball goes in at the end, it goes from being the Ibra show to the Ibra and Lukaku show to tremendous center forwards leading from the front. And it's weird in Serie A this season. You could argue that so many teams are defined by their center forwards in a way that maybe teams elsewhere aren't. Because you've got Osimhen, of course.
Sensation.
Ibra, Lukaku, Edin Dzeko at Roma. I mean, I guess you have that a little bit in Germany with Lewandowski and Haaland. Not so much, I think, here in England for different reasons. Different That's evolutions.
True. No, completely.
Certainly not in La Liga. So it's an interesting situation that's developing. On Milan, you said earlier
Do you believe they can do it? Do you believe they can compete?
This is such a mad season this year that, you know, honestly, right now I'll tell you who can win the title. Inter can win the title. Juve can win the title. Napoli can win the title. Milan can win the title. And Atalanta can win the title.
Sassuolo as well. You said Sassuolo.
Second place. I didn't mention on the show. Why not? It's 2020, man.
The only problem for me for Milan is the Europa League. I think it's a pain in the butt. This season, when you've got that dynamic going forward, when you've got maybe not enough depth in the squad to be able to play in both competitions, because, you know, like, you look at the players who came on in that game. I mean, Tonali came on late, and I mean, Bennacer and Kessié were so strong anyway in that midfield that, okay, you understand, and Tonali will probably start against Celtic on Thursday, but then
Kessié could have been sent off.
You're right, and he got injured, I think, anyway, but like people like, you know, Krunic and, you know, Jogo Dalot, I don't know, people like that on the bench.
Castillejo
came on as well in the second half. I mean, and I just think if they didn't have any European competition at all, there was no Thursday night football, not travelling, nothing at all, I would believe in them in the league if Ibra stays fit.
I mean, they're pretty keen on playing the kids. I think we could have a situation as well in the Europa League where, I mean, obviously, not so much Celtic, although they're coming off they play on Thursday, they're coming off a bad result, but where more teams in Europe, because everybody's facing the situation, right? And more teams maybe play the kids in the Europa League in the group stages, like that. Because like I said, I don't want to bang on about this, but we have never been in this situation in a league like this season, and not only will we see strange results, but you have to dig deep, you have to trust the kids, you have to get the minutes, and that just makes the whole decision to go with three substitutes in the Premier League all the more absurd and inexplicable. Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million dollar stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, derbies are great, but enough derbies. Let's do some quick hits instead.
Let's go, guys.
Manchester City beat Arsenal 1-0 as Pep and Arteta both resort to tactical wizardry. We got to see Ake at left back, which I like, and from what I could tell on television anyway, nobody at centre forward for Arsenal.
That's right. I mean, Willian was, I think, supposed to be the force number nine. It was not that clear. Certainly, he was not really being involved in the game. I just thought being in the stadium was fascinating to work it all out. Joao Cancelo's position as well was quite interesting. I think at times he even himself was not really sure what he was supposed to do, where he was supposed to be, half right back, half centre midfielder, right midfielder. I don't know. It was interesting. Where I thought Pep won the game was by playing Sterling and Aguero together up front, and really Sterling finding the pocket of space, as we saw in the goal, or Aguero. But I thought having that front two really disturbed Arsenal's either back four, back five, depending on, you know, when they were playing that way. But certainly I thought Pep, this one, got the best out of Arteta.
Deserved it.
Meanwhile, Gab, there's plenty of criticism directly towards Sergio Aguero for the way he puts his hand on assistant referee Sean Macielis's shoulder. Your thoughts?
Okay, so people describe this as awkward and uncomfortable, and then people saying, oh, you can't touch a referee, and then other people came out and said, oh, but if that had been a male assistant referee, it wouldn't have been a big deal. We've seen a million times. Well, guess what? It's not a male assistant referee. Mm-hmm. And for better or not, Sean Macielis is a woman, and you can't ignore that fact, and it makes you feel uncomfortable. We can't pretend that there aren't differences between people, that there isn't 5,000 years of human history defining this. Now, I am not an assistant referee, and I am not a woman. In fact, I am a man. I am a large man. So I am not qualified to come out and say this. What I do know is nobody should be put in a position where they might feel uncomfortable. Nobody should be put in a position where they feel they need to explain it themselves. So in the same way that a male referee might be uncomfortable if somebody puts their hands on them and they misinterpret it or whatever, the same thing applies to the nth degree for Sean Macielis. I don't think Aguero should have been booked or sent off. I think somebody should take him aside and say, hey, completely. Kun, don't ever do this again, and let's not have this conversation.
But you know what I find the most hurtful and disappointing is Pep Guardiola's reaction. Because when we asked him the question about the incident, I think we can call it an incident, he went like, oh, come on, Sergio is the nicest man. Come on, guys. What do you mean? Well, it's not because you're nice that you should allow yourself to do things that you should not be doing in the first place anyway. And from coming from Pep, where Pep should have said, you know what, that's right, I will have a word with Kun. Exactly what you said, Gab, you were spot on. And Pep should have said, I'll have a word. It's true, it was inappropriate, a bit patronizing. Call it the way you want. But certainly Pep defending Aguero like this, going like, come on, he's nice. You know, he's nice. There's nothing in there because he's nice. But no, it doesn't work like this.
No, and it's not up for Pep Guardiola,
exactly,
or me or you to judge. 1 week to go until the Clásico in Real Madrid turned in an absolute stinker, losing 1-0 at home to Cádiz. Jules, this may have been one of their worst performances in a long, long time. I don't have any excuses for them. Not this week.
No, not this week. I mean, I don't know. I almost stopped watching and turned off to watch the one show or whatever else. I don't know. I mean, I could not understand how Real Madrid could have been so bad, especially for the first half, the first hour. Maybe Zidane made four changes at halftime because he was that bad.
Because he was annoyed.
Because he was annoyed, and rightly so. But I mean, he's the coach. He should not have made some of those calls from the start. I mean, how Marcelo is still playing for that team is beyond me.
Jules, I don't like to bring up stuff like attitude and body language because I think it's a cop-out. But in this occasion,
everything was wrong about the attitude of their body.
And well done, Cadiz. They played great. The counter-attack was wonderful. They could have scored more goals even. Good on them. They promoted. But Real Madrid, they need to wake up quickly. Barcelona also going to the Clásico next week, Gab, with a defeat. They lost 1-0 to Getafe. Are they doing better than Real Madrid? Or is it as bad?
Well, they're doing better since Getafe are a better team. Yeah. And in the end, the difference was a penalty they gave away. Your boy Griezmann is going to get a lot of stick because, oh, look, he's playing up front and he missed those two chances. Let's leave it. This is the only way it's going to work with Griezmann in that position. Let's give him a chance to play himself out of it. There's nobody else to play there anyway, despite Koeman saying, oh, maybe I'll sign Depay in January. How about you shut up until January and just get these people playing properly? Shout out to Pedri. Played really well.
Played well.
Unlike your other boy, Ousmane Dembele. I don't need to see that guy again this season.
No, you can't see him, but give him a bit of time. He hadn't played for like
25 years. Let's play Ansu Fati there when it matters. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer picks Mata and Fred. Manchester United go a goal down at Newcastle. Bruno Fernandes misses a penalty. It looks bleak. And then they storm back to win 4-1. And even Aaron Wan-Bissaka scores.
Yeah,
Jules, you impressed?
Anything can happen in football. I mean, Harry Maguire scoring a header. Maybe he should play centre-forward instead of centre-back. Wan-Bissaka scoring, I think, his first goal for the club as well. Listen, Newcastle are bad. It was bad from
really
Newcastle.
Really bad.
But United played well. They played well on the counter-attack. Some of the goals were really good. I thought it's good. It's good for them. He rested some players. Some other took the opportunity that they had.
Much well better without Pogba, clearly.
Oh, come on. Give me a breath. Gab, you were at Chelsea against Southampton on Saturday. Finished 3-3. Did you learn anything?
No, I think Chelsea showed all the strengths and weaknesses that we'd seen them show before. They have some very talented individuals. Timo Werner scoring a great goal. Kai Havertz, when you see this dude in person, he is so, so talented.
Yeah.
He's also very raw, and I think to get the best out of him, you need the right people around him. But man, those defensive mistakes. Kepa played because Mondi got himself hurt again. I don't need to see Kepa again. By the way, he does have a really loud voice, which you realize when you're there in person because he's shouting the whole game. But
it's worrying, right? Defensively.
Yeah, and that was as much on Zuma as it was on Kepa. I still don't know what Rudiger's done. There's a lot for Frank to work on. So get to work. With a ton of players missing, Andrea Pirlo goes young and attacking against Crotone and ends up drawing 1-1. Jules, is it time to question the bearded legend for dropping points?
Come on, we like, four games in, five games in. Give him a break. As you said, loads of players missing. Cristiano, McKennie, many others. He tried something. I mean, Crotone are not very good. You have to be honest.
No, Dybala on the bench.
Dybala on the bench. But Morata scored, which I think would be very good for him, for Pirlo, for the team. And then you move on very quickly from a game like this, I think.
Yeah, I just think they weren't prepared. Chiesa sent off on his debut. Yeah. Juve, I think, still did enough to win. But shout out to Mattia Portanova, another guy nobody's ever heard of, and he puts him in the starting lineup. He's going with the kids.
Meanwhile, Gab, Cristiano is engaged in a social media tit-for-tat with Italy's sports minister.
Yeah, there's an old rule in social media, which is normally don't get involved with people who are less famous than you. And I can assure you that Vincenzo Spadafora
But even you follow that rule.
No, I don't. But I'm not Cristiano either. But Cristiano does an Instagram Live, and he says, some people say I broke the quarantine, blah, blah, blah. He's in self-isolation now, of course, having tested, or in quarantine, rather. It's not true. The guy says, Cristiano should lead by example. Cristiano, leave it. Leave it. People know who you are. Most people, thankfully, don't know who this other dude is. Just leave it. Move on. Manuel Lanzini's buzzer-beating wonder strike gives West Ham a point against Spurs in a 3-3 draw that nullifies Harry Kane's exploits. And Kane was fantastic.
Incredible.
Jules, you're not going to blame Mourinho, are you?
Well, you have to a bit.
Come on.
Okay, you 3-0 up. You bring on Gareth Bale and Lucas Moura. Why?
Gareth Bale nearly scored the winner.
No, okay. Gareth Bale, I can give him a few minutes. But Lucas Moura, why do you need a 3-0 up to bring on Lucas Moura?
Counter-attackers.
But you don't need your 3-0 up. What would you counter-attack for anyway? Bring Davis or bring a defender. Go five at the... I don't know, but do something to close the game up.
He's a modern manager.
I don't care.
Mourinho.
He was part... to blame for this, and obviously the players were part because the defender. Yeah, but Mourinho knew that Suchek would go up front. He knew that they would go and put a lot of boards in, crosses, etc. It's not his fault if Aurier gives a silly foul late like this for the third
take
goal.
The and positives.
No, no, but there was positive. But it's a real shame, and he would be gutted to have dropped points like he did.
It is because Spurs
should have won that game every day.
Good. And I like this new Kane.
Yeah, me too. Napoli destroy Atalanta 4-1. Gab. They're showing us again they're the real deal. And Chucky Lozano is reborn and Osimhen is sensational again.
It is absolutely phenomenal. Chucky Lozano, by the way, this is a great story. This is a guy who looked to be on his bags are packed, and Reno said, no, I want you with him. You're good. We're going to rebuild you, and you're going to have a tremendous season. He's a top scorer in Serie A right now, 4 goals or thereabouts. Napoli are really, really deep. They're really good. Mattia Politano scoring both goals.
Great goal.
And I got to give credit. Like, I'm a Gattuso skeptic. I will be the first. I thought, like, he's just, you know, Mr. Shouty, the beard, motivation. No, he completely destroyed Gasperini. He identified the weaknesses on the flanks. They've got Koulibaly. Manolas is back to his best at the back. They've got depth. They're in the running for the Scudetto.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Bayern beat up Arminia Bielefeld 4-1 as Thomas Müller and Robert Lewandowski scored 2 each. You like how I did that? Jules, your boy Luca Hernandez, no, I'm not even going to try, is keeping Alphonso Davies out of the starting 11.
Yeah, I mean,
he's not really.
He's not really. Yeah, I think Alphonso will be back for the Champions League. They're obviously two very different profiles. I think they bring completely different things to their team. But it's good for Lucas to play a bit more. I mean, Arminia Bielefeld, I think you and I, Gab, could have played for them easily on Saturday and probably do better than some of their players. He could have finished more than 4-1. But hey, at least they scored a goal.
I think it's interesting with Davies, because we also saw him play as a winger. I just wonder, because Lucas Hernandez and Alphonso Davies are so different, if he's going to basically adopt kind of horses for courses thing with him. Because look, Lucas Hernandez is still, I think, he's still the record signing, right?
Oh, yeah, 80 million,
you know,
yeah.
We talk about, people say, oh, Maguire's not living up to his fee. Well, you know what? Neither is Lucas Hernandez, because he's been hurt.
Yeah.
So, obviously, big plans for him. Longer term will be central, I assume. But, by the way, can we shout out to Bayern for the fact that they read my column about their lack of depth and brought in, what, 5 players before the window show?
We can if you want to. Of course we can. Dortmund beat Hoffenheim 1-0, but Gab, have we learned that Lucien Favre's bench isn't as deep as we thought, maybe? Especially up front?
Well, I think solely up front. He made a bunch of changes. Obviously, they've got the Champions League coming up, and he understands rotation. I think in other leagues, they're starting to understand rotation. Certainly in the Bundesliga, they're understanding it a bit better than they are in England or in Italy. So he leaves out Erling Haaland. He leaves out Bellingham. Makes a bunch of changes. And they can't score against Hoffenheim. They can't score. They create little. The first half, they were terrible.
Yeah, it was very average, yeah.
And then in the end, Marco Reus comes on. Haaland sets him up and they win. But he played Julian Brandt at center forward. I know we've seen a little bit of that last season. Julian Brandt, he can't play center forward the way Haaland does it. And you can't ask him to do it as a theoretical false nine, because that screws up everything else on the team. It screws up the movement of Reyna, of Sancho.
Royce is the only one, really, no, that can replace.
I don't even think Royce can do it. I think they should go out and say, we need a body in January who can play center forward. We need, like, you know, an off-brand Erling Haaland to go and just do the runs, tie up the defenders, get kicked, because we can't have Julian Brandt doing this.
Or you bring Moukoko to the first team, who's on an incredible game again with the under-19. He's only 15. That's Gab's boy, the prodigy of Borussia Dortmund, who scored another 3 goals, I think, with the under-19.
Scored a hat-trick.
At 15. Yeah. I mean, come on. This is crazy.
And sad story also, apparently.
He was racially
abused as well. But this Moukoko seems unbelievable. Can't wait to see him in the first. Yeah, you're right. Just promote Moukoko now.
I know, exactly. And let's have fun, you know.
Now, Jules, I know you love your techers.
Yeah.
How about the mighty Leipzig, top of the Bundesliga, and Yusuf Poulsen coming on and doing his best Marco van Basten from Euro 88 impression in the 2-0 win over Augsburg?
Exactly. Came on 65th minute, I think. First, I hadn't touched the ball yet. And then Dani Olmo puts the ball high in the air, in the box on the left-hand side, and Poulsen just volleys it with his left foot. Okay, this is not the most elegant of volley. You could clearly see that technically, you know, it's not as Van Basten.
He's not Marco
as
Van
fluid
Basten.
And the angle is more open even than Van Basten against the USSR, but still a great goal and saving them really, because up to then, you know, they struggled. They didn't play with the proper number nine.
No.
And it's just, I don't know why you play with Olmo and then Kunku and Forsberg leading the front.
I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that, you know, he did it last week. Here they were 1-0 up. Poulsen, maybe he's tired from the national team or whatever. Maybe they're saving him for midweek. And of course, you know, the only living sore loss in captivity. I think he came out on the 90th minute.
Yeah.
But it is just too much of a change. I think right now he wants Emil Forsberg to play somewhere.
Okay.
But, you know.
The top of the table, so as you said. You know,
it's working for him.
Exactly.
It's working for him. Give him a different look.
Yeah. Luis Suarez returns from international duty and opens the scoring for Atletico as they win away to Celta Vigo 2-0. He's doing what he's paid for, Gab, right?
Yeah. So if you see his goal, right, he scored early. I think it was after five or six minutes.
Yeah.
And you're thinking like, okay, it's easy finish. But then you realize, you know, he gets open in the box and he finishes. This is what a genuine goal-scoring center forward does. I thought he had a pretty quiet game after that.
Atleti, yeah, I know it's a good goal, but
retreated to becoming usual Atleti. Their second goal was in garbage time. I think it was Carrasco. So I'm not going to read too much into that.
Interesting. And Celta Vigo as well.
And it's Celta Vigo. But you know, Celta...
But defensively, they've never been that strong.
No. A curious thing now is obviously Diego Costa out, and it doesn't look like a good injury. Are we going to see João Félix with Suarez? Are we going to see Correa with Fox?
Yeah,
are we
going to
see Marcos Llorente reinventing himself? I don't think Llorente Suarez works personally.
No, I agree. Probably more João Félix. It's quite natural. And by the way, his movement on the second goal, João Félix, and he hit the bar, and then Carrasco finishes with his. Whew.
Now, we don't want to give Paris Saint-Germain short shrift, even though they played Friday night. Jules, how are they looking ahead of their Champions League clash with mighty Manchester United?
It could be better. I mean, they won 4-0 on Friday night. Kylian Mbappé had an incredible game again. It's just too easy for him.
How did Kylian Mbappe play on? How is it possible that Kylian Mbappe can play on Friday when he was with the French national team?
On Wednesday, yeah. I mean, we were surprised that he started. He played 18 minutes as well. I thought he would play less, but clearly he was on good form. He wanted to play. Thomas Tuchel said so. He's that at that stage just now that you don't go against what he wants to do, I guess. So, but loads of players missing, whether it's injury, suspension for that game. COVID as well for some of them, or at least coming back from it. It would be the same, I think, against United. It would be far from the strongest team possible. But we saw Rafinha, who had an hour and played really well, gave a great assist to Kylian Mbappe on the first goal. We will see, I think, Danilo as well against United, probably. Florenzi was really good again. Hit the post twice before scoring. Moise Kean made his debut, hit the crossbar with a great header. Should have scored one goal, but at least I like the way he moved and the way he played. So there was a lot of positives, although the negatives is all those players missing. And I think they could be a bit short against United on Tuesday night.
Especially since Pogba is very well rested since he didn't start.
Yeah, exactly. Mario Götze makes his first start and scores his first goal for his new team, PSV Eindhoven, who beats Zwolle 3-0 on Sunday. Gab, are you sensing a bit of a fairy tale or you wait until he's injured?
You know what's weird about Mario Götze? I looked this up, right? So obviously, you know, this is the guy who scored a World Cup winning goal in 2014.
Yeah.
He's still only 28 years old. All the stuff he's gone through, all the issues, all the ups and downs. I like to think at some point somebody finds serenity and happiness and stays fit. There's obviously a ton of baggage there. I would have thought PSV Eindhoven, there is still a pretty high standard and there's still a ton of pressure. This is what he wants. I hope he finds happiness there and he can play and he realizes he doesn't need to be the German Messi because there's never going to be a German Messi, let's face it. I fear that maybe he might have to, again, drop down again to then go up again, because if it is the pressure, if it is the expectation, you know, PSV Eindhoven, those things
are
pretty tasty.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I mean, I can only be happy for him. He's quickly becoming one of my favorite Germans.
Oh, nice.
La Real Sociedad are top of La Liga. Sassuolo is second in Serie A. Aston Villa is second in the Premier League. And they have a game in hand. Jules, which of these three is going to finish highest?
Really good question, Gab. I think, I mean, incredible start of the season from Dean Smith, Aston Villa, from De Zerbi, Sassuolo, who had a wonderful game on Sunday. I still think Real Sociedad just looked the more solid. They had a really good start of the season last year already as well. Then they ran out of steam a bit after the restart and the pandemic. But of the three, and I really hope Villa and Sassuolo do great, but I would have to put a bit of money on Real Sociedad to finish the highest of the three.
Who needs Martin Odegaard anyway?
True. No Supporters Shield would be awarded in MLS this season. Gab, is this a big deal?
It's not a big deal. It's kind of weird. Some people are like, oh, well, this is silly. The Supporters Shield, for those who don't know, is just simply a prize that supporters give out to the team that finishes with the most points at the end of the MLS regular season before the playoffs. The supporters said, guys, this season is a big giant asterisk. We're playing unbalanced schedules. There's no fans there. We're not going to give out the shield. MLS has said, okay, fine. Supporters will decide this. Personally, I think it's the right thing to do. It doesn't mean you cancel the season, but this season, like I said, is a big walking asterisk, and we all know the reason why.
Yeah, I agree.
Right, so we got time for this week, but Jules, should we come back on Thursday and do this?
Definitely, Gab.
All righty, till then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.